You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Matt Chandler, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dehati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey there, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. I'm with Todd Atkins and Jess Thompson today.
Hello.
This is fun because Todd and Jess go way back, but I just brought them together here on this podcast. They haven't worked together for years.
I didn't know she was going to be here.
Yeah.
Surprise.
I wouldn't have come.
It's true. No, I know too many stories. I know too much.
She does. She could, ruin my ministry career.
And vice versa.
And vice versa. That's right.
Well, that's a good setup for learning from the two of you. So here we are. If you're like, can I have a child, and you at least get a baby name book, right? I mean, there's something you have there that you can reference. There's no baby name book for new churches, although that would be a cool idea. Todd, maybe you should write that.
No, I recall seeing a list of names for new churches. So it's been a while. I mean, obviously, part of the reason why I'm on this podcast is because we used to run a podcast called New Churches and ran newchurches.com. And, you know, now we're partnering with NAM to do that. And I can remember, I think that there's like a starter list of names somewhere. Now, Daniel and I, Daniel M, who I worked with at the time, and I, we would disagree on that because I don't think you should kind of start mad libbing your church name.
Mad libbing. That's hilarious.
Let me just pick through this list. I do think though that, you know, you should like have similarly as you do when you are naming a child, you've got a couple in the queue and you kind of test them out. I always say you need to go out on the porch and yell the name, like all the first, middle, and last names. Get in this house this instant. That way you'll know if it flows.
Oh, okay.
Church name, you should probably do something similar, but not at all similar, actually. You should probably go wherever you're going to plant the church and talk to a couple people and, you know, introduce the name to them and see what they think versus what you think. You may think it's awesome.
Right.
And they may have some reason why it's not awesome. There could be community history there that you don't know. Or there's just a negative connotation that you might step into.
Yeah. So, hey, Jess, you and I were a part of a thing one time. It was a church planting focus group.
Right.
And it's several years ago, but what I remember about that is that we brought some church planters in to pitch their idea for a new church to a mixed group of people, some Christians, some non-Christians. And then they left the room, and I think you were left in the room to moderate the discussion and to gather the feedback. What do you remember about that, and what stands out to you when it comes to church naming?
Well, I think what was amusing is people try to be so creative in coming up with the church name, and often the name that they settle on, is that a church? Is that what are we talking about? And some of the names are just too creative. So I think we were trying to encourage them to balance between uniqueness and people actually understanding clarity, understanding what it is that you're naming and what people are coming to. Todd and I, which just as a reference, Todd was my boss. We worked at Frontline at McLean Bible Church. That's why we have so much dirt on each other. But Frontline was a young adult ministry, and people, it was also the name of the, I think it still is, of the flea and tick. And so sometimes I think you get the super creative name and people don't understand at all what you're talking about. So,
well, the thing to remember about that too is what was the website that we had?
Jeff? Yes, that's right.
It was frontline.to because frontline.com was taken. TO stands for Tonga, by the way, and our church was in DC. So why was it .to? Because somebody didn't go through this process that we're talking about right now, guys, and see if that name was available.
Wow.
Yes. So, you know, there's Hey, if you're Grace Community, I'm sorry. The Grace Community is already taken. Grace Community is already taken. GCC is already taken. So, you know, there's going to be some limitations. That's one of the things you need to think through before you get too far down the line. And you're like,
is your domain available before you decide on your name?
I just paid $26,000 for this name because Stetzer bought it and parked on it.
Right. Yeah. So I think in that focus group, that was one of the things that stood out. And then also receiving feedback from people, because we would share this name. We don't get it. Like, we talk about it and then the church planter would leave and just that they didn't care. They liked the name. They were sticking with it regardless of what people thought. So I think not only to your point, Todd, like do your due diligence, but then once you test it and you get feedback, listen to the feedback.
Right. I remember one of those specific church planters in that focus group. I remember 8 out of 8 people around the table said they were less likely to attend the church after hearing the name, and he still kept the name. Do you remember that?
I do. I don't remember which name it was.
I do. I won't say it to protect the innocent here, but I do. I remember exactly who it was.
And to Todd's point, you know, ask non-Christians and Christians, because sometimes non-Christians, it makes sense to us as believers who live and work in ministry and hear all kinds of, you know, Christian names, but, you know, don't pick some Greek name and then think that everybody's going to understand.
I think one of the reasons that church planters feel so strongly about the names or maybe one of the reasons why they don't listen to outside counsel is this sense that I'm on this journey. It's between me and God. He's called me to do this work. And that's actually a good impulse. I don't want to be too critical of that impulse. The impulse to say, God's calling me to do this. I'm going to obey him, and I'm not going to really care what other people think. There's a lot of times in church planning where you really have to press forward, even when things don't look good or when others around you aren't giving you good advice. But this is a specific situation in naming your church where it makes a lot of sense. The name of the church really isn't very consequential in the big scheme of things. It's not the most important thing about your church. So you should really, but it is going to determine if somebody is likely to visit it or not based on the impression they get from the name.
Yeah. Totally. And again, I would just venture to say, especially if it is a fairly common name for a church, you need to check that area very, very well to see if there's already a church there with that name or if the people in that area have a negative connotation with that phraseology. And it doesn't hurt you at all, especially once you land on it. My wife says that she has to remind me sometimes that manipulation is not a spiritual gift. So one of the things that you can do though is she's got lots of quotes and Jess knows a lot of them. We were actually in a small group together as well when we weren't serving directly with each other. We were in a small group too. And so the interesting thing there when manipulation is not a spiritual gift, I'm saying if you choose the name and you know it's a pretty solid name, go around to every business and say, "Hey, would you come to a church called, you know, XYZ?" And most of them are going to give you a positive answer. What does that do? It puts them, I know it doesn't seem like it, folks, but it puts them one step closer to visiting your church because you can come back and say, "Hey, you were a part of naming this. Do you remember this? Well, we're open. And so come on. You said you would come, right?" even though that it may sound, you know, somewhat manipulative, you know, hey, the Holy Spirit can use that to hopefully prompt them to bring them in.
And I would also, one other thing that I remember is not to make it too long, like Little Valley Church of the Lord in like 3 or 4 names. Sometimes I feel like people get these really long church names that just nobody can remember or say.
Right. Let's go through a few categories of church names. So basically, and this comes from Church Planting Thresholds, if you are interested in learning more about this. And there's a section in the book, it's actually on page 44 of the book, where we talk about the categories of names for new churches. So the first one is a geographic name, and then a scriptural name, an illustrative name, a denominational name, a trendy name, and a non-church name. And so let's go through each of those. Let me give you an example or two of each of those. And then let's just talk about each of them after I share. So the first one's a
trendy
geographic.
Names are going to be fun.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. Mm-hmm. So the first one's a geographic name. So this would be like Springfield Community Church, maybe naming after your town or sometimes even more specifically like a neighborhood. We have a neighborhood here called Independent Hill. And so there's a church with that name. We all know the famous Thomas Road Baptist Church in Lynchburg, Virginia, that's no longer on Thomas Road. There's First Street Church and those sorts of things. So let's talk about that. What positives and negatives do you see to having a geographic name?
I think it depends on the name of where you're from. It could be a good thing or a bad thing. It depends on the geographic area you're representing.
Yeah.
But well, I grew up going to a church called Burke Community Church. And so like you, I felt like there was some, it was like our town is where we lived. Felt like there was a sense of ownership, pride, allegiance. So I think it can be a good thing depending on how big your town is and, you know, what it's called.
You do limit yourself from a con perspective. I love the name. If you're saying, hey, we know we're going to be in this general vicinity and we know we're not going to do multi-site in different areas of our city, then fine. I think you're good to go. In fact, that'd probably be my favorite out of the options because everybody knows where it is and you can kind of claim it if there isn't already one.
Right.
But let's say that you are Thomas Road Baptist Church that isn't on Thomas Road anymore, and then you have two or three sites ultimately. Even if you're saying, oh, well, we're not traditional multi-site. We don't like that. We use these as church plants. You know, we're basically sending these out. These sites are really on a 3-year track to actually plant, like a Mountain Lake or somebody else would do.
Right.
You know, even still, I would say, man, you're kind of setting yourself up there if you do a regional. But if you're locked in on, hey, we know we're gonna stay in this general vicinity. And we also know that any churches we plant are just going to go out and be a traditional plant. They're not going to keep our name. Then I think it's a really, really solid option. Maybe your best option.
Yeah. I mean, because church plants move around so much these days and most churches don't settle in the place. If you were just to survey the churches that get started, most churches don't settle in the place they think they're going to settle. They end up somewhere different. And so I just would encourage you to be aware of that and make that decision knowing that there's a good chance your church will move to a place different than what you imagine it to be. So the second one we want to talk about is a scriptural name. And that seems on the surface like to be a great idea. So, you know, referencing back specific things in scripture, things like Grace Church would be an example, or maybe Koinonia Church would be another example. What are some pros and cons the two of you see with this approach?
Well, I think being too specific in terms of a verse could limit you in terms of non-Christians understanding. It depends on maybe how outwardly focused your church is being, because you don't want to give a reference that really, you know, non-Christians have no idea. Koinonia, they're like, what are you talking? So I think just being careful to limit yourself to believers who have an understanding of the Bible and references in scripture.
Right.
Since she's playing bad cop, I'm going to play good cop. So we're switching back and forth. We're keeping you guessing, Clint. So I would say the cool thing about that, whether it's like, you know, you've got 1122 as well, or you've got like scriptural references that are numbers or scriptural names. And so I do think that there's an opportunity when explaining it. So I have an opportunity to cast vision when you ask me, why is this named this, or this is our church, and this is why it's named this.
Right.
Like, you better have that. If you got a weird name, or if you got a name that isn't known to most non-Christians, then, man, you're going to have to do some explaining. But it is kind of an opportunity if you've got that nailed down and it fits really well with the vision of your church.
Great point. And I think I think most people that name their church something strange like that or something that's not obvious, they intend to use that as an opportunity to launch into conversation.
That does bring up one more point. Sorry to keep talking, Clint, because I know we're probably getting close to time. But there's this little thing called onomatopoeia. And that is not what you call your church. That is a word that spells like it sounded. It sounds, right? And so if you call your church Koinonia and I want to attend it, I don't know how to, if I'm a normal red-blooded American, I don't know how to spell that. And so I'm going to really mess that up and trying to Google it or whatever. So just also think about that.
Yeah.
Like it's not like none of these are make it or break it things, but you kind of want to say, okay, here's a lot of stuff for me to consider. And there's some trade-offs here. So,
go to the worst case scenario. What's going to be your stumbling block? And I think, like you said, having a second, like we would say frontline, and you'd have to say, the young adult ministry of Muslim Bible Church. You couldn't just say, come to Frontline. That they didn't know what that meant. So I think knowing that what, if you can Google it and what's going to come up in your Google search is pivotal.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. I always tell people when choosing a church name, it's like picking an outfit that you're going to wear for the rest of your life. I mean, this is going to, you're going to live with this. The next pastor and congregation and leaders, they're going to live with it. It's not likely something that will change, although churches do sometimes change their names. It's not very common.
Well, kids, it's like when you name your kid, you think of what are they going to get picked on, right? Like, how can this name be used against them?
Right.
What does this name rhyme with?
100%. I could give you many funny stories about choosing our kids' names, but you have to go with the one that's least going to get them bullied for something.
I will say this, it might be interesting in this day and age when we talk about relaunching or revitalizing or fill in the blank, where somebody's going to go in and maybe replant a church. We may need to do an episode on being really, strategic and intentional in that name change, because it's a chance for rebirth. It's a chance for opportunity. I mean, you look at scripture and you see a bunch of times God met with someone and he changed their name.
Right.
And it set a new course for them in their life. It meant something. And right. So there's a perfect opportunity at some point, maybe in the future, for us to get back together and talk
Look
about
at
what
you,
that might.
Todd. Let's just drop a little mic right there.
That's true. That's a real thing that happens a lot. And there's sort of two schools of thought on that. One of them is we need to preserve the testimony of this church and this community into the future. So we need to reclaim the good deeds of this church in the name of the church, so the church doesn't sort of go out on a bad reputation. There's a whole school that kind of thinks like that. And then there's definitely the school of thought, which I count myself among, that is a little bit more like what you just presented. Let's go on to the next one. The next one is an illustrative name. And this would be a name like Mosaic Church or Impact Church. It probably reflects in some way an illustration that you hope is a key or core illustration for your church. Another one might be like Open Door Baptist Church, where say, you know, maybe the church has had its doors closed to certain groups of people in the past, but now we're going to be more open. Or maybe we're going to be a mosaic made up of lots of different types of people. We're going to be a multicultural church, or perhaps an impact church. We're going to make a big impact in our community. So what do you think about that? How does that strike you when you first hear it?
You want me to go first, because then you want to take the opposite of whatever. I'm picking up this consistency here. I have to say, I feel like Todd's going to say the opposite, but there are some impact names that I actually respond pretty well to. I think you can't go too far. And I like that it says like Impact Church. You know, it's not just impact, because that could be anything. So I think it's important to know what the word is that's after that sort of creative word. But for the most part, I do think it telling a story within your name and using a descriptive word like that, that sort of you can imagine and wrap your head around.
Yeah.
I don't mind that.
I would say just be really careful when you do that. That goes back to what we talked about in the beginning, where I think it's fine to do that. I think it's fine to do that. But what you really need to do is try that out with people in the community still, because it, again, might sound awesome to you and your very church launch team, but they may have a different,
Yes,
so it's a slippery slope there.
You could get real crazy real fast with that, but sure. I think within reason. I like it.
Okay, so let's turn now to talk about trendy church names, trendy church names. We talked about denominations, we've talked about illustrative names, scriptural names, geographic names, but let's talk about trendy church names. This would be things like The Edge Church or H2O Church or Epic Church. I mean, have you ever seen a church called Epic Church? The obvious problem I feel like I have to state with this, you probably could think of a few problems, but the obvious problem is that church plants are not epic. They don't generally make that big of an impact. I mean, I'm just being honest. I go to a lot of church plants. I've started a few myself, and they are, if there's something that could describe them, it's like underwhelming. You know, they really lack energy in the beginning, and it takes a while to get the flywheel kind of turning. So if we start with a name like that, it feels a little aspirational and not realistic. What do you guys think?
I feel like it's a little just outdated at this point. I think people want to know what it is and have like realistic expectations. It feels unnecessary to do something so, you know, trying to be current and relevant. People see through that. It feels pretentious. It feels just too much. So I'm just jaded, but if they always just ring, I feel like you can make fun of them in any different way. There's like, but maybe yes. That's because I grew up in, you know, more of a young adult, but that was the thing. Right. Everybody had a trendy new church name. So I think it's just, I think you can do better.
Todd, what you think?
I'm going to have to agree here. I don't want to confuse the name of the church with something that is going to be announced on, you know, the radio as this Sunday at the Carson Fairground. I don't know whether it's going to be Bigfoot and Gravedigger or, you know, a solid worship experience, right, and fun for your children. Like, I do think it's overdone, and it may have been for a different generation than what is currently coming up, who is very well versed on reading things. They will do math, right, that we won't do. I'm lumping us all together, even though Jess is far younger.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. It was a season where that was happening a lot. And I don't see that. If anything, right now, I see the trend to be classic, you know, like going back to the classic.
Yes.
Even the beyond denominational to the historic or the, you know, the vintage, maybe you might say. Okay, trendy names, big thumbs down on trendy names, discouraging that. And then non-church names. This is sort of in the same category, but names without the word church in them at all. Things like The Spring or Access or The Fellowship, those sorts of things. What problems or advantages do you see to naming your church something like that?
Well, I would say if you're looking for an advantage, it's that at first glance, people might consider you rather than just shut it down. And if they're not interested at all in church, they may give you a second glance. But at the same hand, what we've said, I think, nowadays, there's actually a Christian comedian who has a funny thing, which it's probably not appropriate, but he goes like to compare church names to, gosh, I'm sorry, we need to edit it. I shouldn't have gone down this road.
You gotta finish it up. No, if we're gonna edit, no, you gotta finish it. If it's bad, we'll edit it. Weed shops?
Weed, like, you know how you can buy weed now. So the names of weed shops to churches. And he's like, what do you think this is? Is it a weed shop or is it a church? And I can't tell
I just want to say, for those listening to this podcast, because I don't know that we should edit that out.
No, please edit this out.
Do you pass the weed shop test? Does your church name pass the weed shop test? That's all you have to do, Jess.
Right,
that's not bad. You just need to say, hey, this is a real thing. If you can't pass the weed shop test,
okay, sorry,
then it probably shouldn't be the name of your, or depends on your target again.
It depends on your target.
Because somebody may show up.
Oh, man.
I should have thought through where that was ending before I started.
To the extent in which I have editorial control over this, that's staying. So Okay. Well, that is a fascinating conversation that went way too long, guys. But we talked about church names. And I thought about this episode, I thought, we're not going to really have a whole lot to say about this. But turns out I was wrong. Let me say, if you didn't hear it already, choosing a church name is like choosing an outfit that you're going to wear for the rest of your life. You're going to have to live with it for a long time. So, it, you know, I'd probably choose something kind of classic, you know, a polo, some nice blue jeans, something that can fit in multiple contexts. I'm going to feel comfortable in. And so you got to think about not just you and how you're feeling right now about your new church, but how the rest of the staff and leadership and members are going to feel about the name of that church far into the future. So thanks so much for listening to the New Churches podcast. Our guests today, Jess Thompson and Todd Atkins. Thanks, guys. As you may know, our team over at newchurches.com has been working really hard to make great video courses for you to use. And we've been working on this one course called the Church Planting Masterclass. This thing's incredible. It's got some of the best practitioners in church planting talking about relevant subjects that every church planter cares about and aspiring church planters care about. Well, we've just finished half of the course, chapters, modules 1 through 6 out of 12 that we're going to have, 40 videos by incredible practitioners like Matt Chandler and Trillia Newbell and David Platt and Ed Stetzer. They're all on there. And we are offering an incentive to try to get people to check out the Church Planting Masterclass. Of course, the class is free. It doesn't even cost anything. But to encourage people to go and take the class, for the first 500 people who complete modules 1 through 6, we're going to mail you like real books, printed books. We're going to mail them to you. Two of my favorite church planting books, Tom Bernito's book called The Honest Guide to Church Planting, and then Christine Hoover's book, The Church Planting Wife. So we're going to mail those to you. All you have to do is complete modules 1 through 6 and do a little 10-question quiz at the end of it. And if you complete that in the mail, you're going to get these great church planting books and resources. We're doing all that because we want to encourage you to become familiar with the Church Planting Masterclass so that you can use it to help disciple leaders and multiply churches in your own context.
You've been listening to the New Churches podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.